but then Elodie opened the front door and surprised me. I hadn't even realized. I was on my front porch. Chapter 13. My house is small. When you go through the front door, you're already in the living room. That's one of the things I like about it. The way it's all cozy and warm, everything there waiting for me. No surprises, except the faulty electrical work that I still haven't been able to fix correctly. The lights and TV were on when I got home that night. The room filled with the voice of Olivia Pope. And there was Elodie, standing at the door, greeting me with a nervous smile. Something was up. I hadn't known Elodie that long, but I felt I knew her better than I knew the father who I'd lived with for a lifetime. We met at work on her first day hired. I found her in the cleaning supplies closet, crying because a client yelled at her when the massage oil she used was too hot. We didn't have much in common, other than being the same age. And even that, well, I felt older somehow. I looked older, too. Elodie had this youthful air around her, a forever teenager, especially when she smiled. And when she was nervous or sad, she looked about 16, maybe younger. That brought out the protector in me. I didn't have a choice but to grow up fast. Even at 20, I barely remember a time when I was free of adult thoughts and worries. Elodie tried her best to be the perfect young army wife, but she was already at the center of so many petty rumors. The wives in Philip's platoon made little jokes about her accent and called her a mail-order bride, despite the reality that tons of soldiers met their wives online. I'm sure my client Stuart had some stats on that, too, about how many members of the military met their spouses on social media. That didn't seem to matter to these women who entertained themselves by belittling Elodie. That's how a lot of military installations were, everyone bickering and jostling for position. Elodie's neighbors were snarky assholes who spent their days selling pyramid schemes on Facebook and bullying her over her grass being an inch too long. That's not an exaggeration. I was with her once when the mayor of her housing department pulled up, tires screeching, and scolded Elodie for letting her grass grow half an inch too long. Yes, the mayor measured. No, she didn't have anything better to do. That's why Elodie preferred to spend her nights on my couch or next to me in my bed, depending on where she fell asleep. I got the feeling she liked the couch the most. She didn't wake up asking for her mom or Philip when she was on the couch. I planned on asking Elodie about the guy, Cale, I had met earlier. Obviously, she knew him, but how? She didn't have many friends, as far as I was aware, and she didn't spend much time socializing. While I was looking at my phone for a text from my brother, hoping for one, not surprisingly, there was nothing from him, Elodie walked to the couch, sat down, and tucked her feet under her. Her petite body was changing, her belly starting to swell. I wondered where the baby would sleep in my little house. The thought made me equal parts excited and terrified. Elodie's favorite American show at the moment was Scandal. She was binge-watching it for the first time, and while it was on, she was completely checked out. I wished I could find something that I loved as much to distract my mind from its constant flow of thought. "What season are you on now?" I asked, watching her spring up again. 2, she said softly as she moved toward the kitchen. She was being so quiet. I pulled my shoes off, and it wasn't until I dropped one on the floor and something moved in my peripheral vision that I realized another person was in my house. A noise, a little like a shriek, flew from my mouth when I saw him. He was staring at me, the one-syllable client. He was sitting in my chair, the dark pink used-to-be-red one that my Nana gave my mom before I was born. I always loved it, and because it had sat in my dad's storage unit after my mom left, I decided it was mine to take. She left it, and us, and the chair was a tiny victory for me. Hey? I said when my heart stopped doing little flips from the aftershock of surprise. How did I not see a whole human in my living room?
How was work?
Elodie asked, looking at the TV while her fingers picked at the fabric on her frayed shorts, and then back at me. Good. I stared at this kale guy, and he stared back at me. When I would recall this later, the first time he was inside my house, the memory would linger in my thoughts, changing from a burning pain to pure bliss, and back, again and again and again. But when it happened in real life, it happened fast. Before he was anything to me, before he was everything, he was just a quiet stranger with a blank face and distant eyes. There was something inscrutable about him, something so closed that I couldn't even begin to read him. He hated peppermint oil and hadn't wanted me to touch his legs during his treatment. Those were the only clues I had about who he was. He stared at me for a few seconds, then looked away and stared at the wall for so long that I almost wanted to count the seconds until he blinked. I smelled the popcorn right before the popping sound started. "I'm making popcorn," Elodie announced. She was nervous. What was going on here? Were they having a movie night? Netflix and chill? The whole situation was weird. He was fucking weird. "Okay," I excused myself. "I'm going to take a shower. Have to be at my dad's at 7. I walked down the hallway. Elodie followed, chewing on her bottom lip. "Well," I asked. "He arrived home last night. He was with my Philip." Her voice was low, and I could tell she was gearing herself up to ask me something. My mom was like this, too, when she wanted something.
"Can he stay here for a day until he can get a hold of his..."
She trailed off, stopping for a second.
"Until he can get into his place?
Sorry to ask like this.
I held up my hand.
"How do you know this guy?"
"Oh, I met him right before they left. He's a good guy, Karina, honest. He's Philip's closest friend over there."
"What's he doing back?" I asked her. She shook her head.
"I didn't ask. Should I ask?"
She peered into the living room. "I wouldn't now," I told her. "He can stay here, but if he ends up being a problem, he's out. So are you," I teased her. She smiled at that and touched my arm. She was always so affectionate. Me? Not so much.
"Thank you, you're the..."
I know, I'm the best. Now I have to shower so I'm not late to my dad's. She rolled her eyes.
"Yeah, you should thank me."
We both laughed, and I shut the bathroom door in her face and sank against the wall. I'm not the kind of person to let a stranger, especially a man, stay in my house. But there I was, muddying my judgment for the first of many times when it came to kale. Chapter 14. My house was in dire need of a fewish repairs. It had been that way since I'd moved in nearly a year ago. Every day it was the same dance, bouncing from foot to foot, completely naked, waiting for the water to heat up. That wasn't even the worst of it. Once the water got hot, it didn't stay that way. Not for long, anyway. The water went from hot to cold to hot again. I could barely stand it. I loved my slightly shabby house, but there were a lot of things that needed fixing, and it was going to take a while to get through them all. I tried to do some of the smaller renovations myself, like the shower tiles I bought during an overly adventurous Saturday afternoon at the hardware store. I bought cans of paint, little tubes of white gunk to patch the holes in the hallway walls, some knobs to replace the ones on the kitchen cabinets, and some tiles for the bathroom. The knobs found their way onto the cabinets. I had to admit, they really did update the cabinetry like HGTV told me they would. I wasn't necessarily good at home demo, but I really loved doing it with the little bit of money I had. I painted the kitchen walls, then I started the bathroom shower tiles. As in, I removed about half of them and replaced, maybe, 6? I counted them. Okay, so, 8. As convenient as it was to use the constant remodel as a way to discourage guests, most notably my dad, I really wished I had the money and skill to do everything I wanted to do to the house.
One day I would. This house was my way to prove that I could take care of myself. I didn't know who I was trying harder to convince, myself or my dad. And did it really matter? The water was finally warm enough to wash my hair. It shorted out on me only a couple of times. When I turned it off, the shower still dripped behind me as I rough-dried my hair. I thought again of Elodie's friend, the stranger in my house. He seemed nice enough, but too quiet. Was he rude or just shy? His demeanor didn't come off as shy at all. As I wrapped a hand towel around the leaking bath faucet and plugged in my hair dryer, I wondered if Philip was the kind of guy who would mind his friend staying with his pregnant wife. I started to feel uneasy as I blow-dried the tips of my hair. It was impossible to blow-dry in less than 30 minutes, and I had only about 10 before I had to leave. That would have to do. I had to do laundry, and soon. I didn't need to be super dressed up for my dad and his wife, but I knew my outfit. And Estelle's would be topics of conversation at the dinner table. Outside of our apparel and the typical, "Have you seen any good movies lately?" question, my stepmom had nothing to talk to me about. To be fair, I had even less to say to her. My dad's insult, framed as a question about my career, always came up toward the end of dinner. As predictable as the tide, he made me feel lousy about my job, no matter how much I loved it. It didn't matter. It wasn't enough. It would never be. He made me feel like shit. I could hear Elodie's voice as I got dressed. It sounded like she was trying to explain scandal to her soldier friend. She was the absolute worst at explaining movies or shows to anyone. She always got character names confused and would spoil the ending without even meaning to. As someone who hated spoilers, I now knew better than to ask her about anything she had already seen. I barely had any clothes left in my dresser, so I shoved my hand in the Forever 21 bag next to my nightstand. There wasn't much of use in the bag. A pair of jeans, one size too big, and a brown button-up shirt that fit me everywhere but the chest. I stretched my arms out to see how much of an opening there was between the buttons. Ugh, too much. The last thing I needed was for my dad to comment on my clothes being too small. I ended up throwing on a black t-shirt with a little pocket on it, and my go-to black jeans with a hole at each knee. I knew my dad would comment on them, but he always made the same jokes. "You have a hole in your pants," or, "I hope you didn't pay full price for destroyed jeans." I finally made it out to the living room with about 5 minutes to spare before I had to leave. Cale was sitting in the same spot, his eyes looking like they were going to close at any minute, his t-shirt clinging to his broad shoulders. The chair looked so small when he was in it. He had to be at least 6 inches taller than me, and at least 10 taller than Elodie. The longer I looked at him, the bigger he seemed to grow. Elodie darted out of the kitchen with a big bowl of popcorn. "Leaving?" she asked. I nodded, digging my hand into the bowl. I was starving. I couldn't even remember if I'd had anything to eat today. I knew Molly's food was in our fridge, and I would eat it as a late-night snack after barely touching whatever Estelle would be serving. "I'm going to be late," I said, groaning. "What would happen if you didn't go?" Elodie and I often joked about my Tuesday date. We did that every single Tuesday, to be exact. "They would disown me?" I looked at Cale. He wasn't looking our way, but somehow I knew he was listening. He was a soldier, after all. "So wouldn't be so bad, yeah?" She licked her buttery fingers and then wiped them across her shorts. "Not bad at all, actually." I grabbed my water jug from the table by the couch. Elodie went a little far with the salt on the popcorn. "Do you want me to bring you home dessert?" She nodded, smiling with a mouthful of kernels. "I'll be back around 9:30. "Maybe later, but hopefully not," I told both of my house guests. I found myself wondering what they would be doing after I left. The images in my head bothered me a little, not only because Elodie was married, but because this guy seemed off. Before I could even contemplate that, his voice surprised me as I reached the door.
"Can I use your shower?"
His voice was soft as rain, and he looked at me
patiently. A look I would come to know well. Kale was familiar in the way that only a stranger could be. I hadn't seen him before today, but already I had memorized his face. The thick draw of his brow, the little scar above his eye. It was like I had come across him somewhere or sometime before. Maybe I had seen him in passing, at a store or on the street, in line for a coffee or to pay for gas. Or maybe he had one of those faces that felt familiar. There were people like that.
"Can I?"
he asked again. I fumbled a little. Yeah, of course. Of course you can shower.
"Thanks,"
Kale muttered and stood up, heading toward the bathroom. He looked so big next to my little leather couch. Actually, he looked so big next to everything in my house, even the china cabinet I bought off Craigslist, before I realized how dangerous it was to meet strangers in the back of the Walmart parking lot. I had a lot of stuff in my house, most of it old and previously owned. Until now, I'd never thought about how my home may have looked to others, but suddenly I felt insecure that he might be judging me. Did he notice the pile of dirty clothes desperately waiting to be washed, the stack of dirty dishes in the sink? And why did I care? "If there's that one by," Elodie struggled for the English word. "The one with the little, care." She held up her fingers and I finished her thought for her. "Cherries?" I had retained zero of what I learned from high school French class. Elodie nodded, but she didn't have to. I knew she could eat an entire cherry pie in one sitting. I'd seen her do it. And who could blame her? My dad's wife, Estelle, was a decent cook. If I liked her more, I would admit that she was a great cook. But I didn't, so I wouldn't. I assured Elodie if there was cherry pie on offer, it would be hers. "Is he always this quiet?" I asked her. Then I shouted, "Towels are in the closet behind the bathroom door," loud enough that he would hear me. Of course, he didn't respond, but I heard the cabinet creak, so I knew he heard me. She shrugged and winced a little. "I don't know." "Yeah, don't remind me," I sighed, wondering again what I had agreed to. She chewed on her lip the way she always did, and I gave her a somewhat reassuring smile. I left before another minute could pass. Chapter 15. I was late. Not a 5-minute, "Oh, there was traffic," late. This was big late, the kind of late that would end with my dad's dramatic sighs and a lecture about how Estelle had to keep the oven on to warm the food, but now the chicken was all dried up, and did I ever think of anyone but myself? I was already supposed to be at my dad's house, and I was still sitting in my driveway. As I said, late. I wasn't sure why I was prolonging my lateness by sitting in my car and staring out the windshield in silence. Sometimes, I wished my car wouldn't start, so I wouldn't have to go, though my dad would complain even more and come pick me up. I hated any and all obligations that I had no control over. I didn't like to be told what to do and where to be, and yet I let my dad put that burden on me. He'd applied that kind of pressure my whole life, and I did nothing to stop it. I checked my phone again. A missed call from a random number. When I called back, an automated robot voice said it was a collect call for my mother. I bet the bill collector would have more success finding her than I would. My mom was the last person I needed to think about right now, and I started to feel that sinking pit in my stomach that I didn't have the energy for tonight. I went on Instagram out of habit and scrolled through pictures of girls I had known in high school who were now starting their adult lives or in the military themselves. Not a ton of people I went to high school with ended up going to college. For money or whatever reason, it just wasn't the norm like it was in movies. I stopped scrolling when I saw a picture of a coast, bright blue water, and white sands. This was the backdrop to a couple of lounge chairs shaded by beach umbrellas, and in the corner of the photo, two hands clinking glasses of what I guessed were piña coladas. The caption read, OMG, if you think this view is nice, wait till we post pics tonight. The sky here is so beautiful, with a bunch of heart eye emojis. The account belonged to Josie Spooner, a one-time friend and a complete social narcissist, who posted every time she left the house. Her daily coffee cup with a quote about how she's ready to kick Monday's ass, or, ugh, people suck so bad, don't feel like talking about it, filled my feed often. What was the purpose of telling the world that she didn't want to talk about it? Why post it? I didn't know why I didn't just delete her or my whole account. I hadn't spoken to her since we moved from Texas. Then again, if I deleted everyone who annoyed me on social media, I would have zero friends. I was mid-eye roll when I caught something out of the corner of my peripheral vision. It was Kale, dressed in his tan camouflage ACUs, striding down the grass and onto the sidewalk. I rolled my window down and called to him. Hey! He walked toward my car and leaned into the open passenger side window. He had to duck down a little so he could see me. His eyes were bright in the setting sun. They were more than bright. They were striking. They were distracting. The unnerving cocktail of vulnerability and certainty in them seemed to sway me, to make me want to be kind to him. Where are you going? Was something wrong with the shower? I know it can be a pain in the ass. The water goes from boiling to freezing in like 1 second and—
Shower was fine.
He had one of his hands hidden in the pocket of his uniform pants, and the other was resting on the window lining. The black ink tattoo on his forearm was in full view. I couldn't tell what it was without staring, and he was way too close to not notice. Are you going somewhere?
To my company,
he answered softly. Right now? I looked at the street to see who was there to pick him up, but there were no cars. You're walking? I asked again, engaging in way too much conversation with him. Every few seconds, I forgot I was already late to dinner. He shrugged.
Yeah, my truck's there.
He looked down at his uniform.
And all of my clothes.
But it's so far from here to walk. Why don't you call an Uber? He shrugged again. Was he really going to walk 3 miles? I looked at the digital clock on my dash. 7:06. I should be knocking on my dad's door right now. But here I was, sitting in my driveway, debating with myself whether or not to offer him a ride to his company. We were both going to the same place, after all. Well, depending where his company was. Fort Benning wasn't as big as, say, Fort Hood, but it was spread out and took a while to get from one side to the other. Without saying a word, Kale stood up straight, his upper body disappearing from view as he walked away. I called out for him again and leaned toward the passenger side, almost by instinct. Do you want a ride? I'm going through the West Gate. Where's your company? He leaned down again.
It's near Patton, same gate, but I'm good. Thank you, though.
I was a bit annoyed and surprised by his blunt response, so it took me a second to say anything. I'll literally pass it on my way. I'm already late anyway, it won't kill me to be a tiny bit later. I said that, but I knew every second would count with my dad. I could only see Kale's hands, because they were no longer in his pockets. He was fiddling with his fingers, picking at the skin around his fingernails. An anxious tick? I could have watched him stand there for an hour, taking in the tiny bits of character he was giving me. My mouth was physically dry, desperately drinking in the smallest details, the freckle on the tip of his thumb. The way he dug at his skin reminded me of my brother. He had skin peeling around every visible finger. Austin used to get so antsy during car rides, especially those to visit our mom in her apartment right after she moved out. She bounced from place to place, and my brother's hands bore the evidence of his pain and her instability. The first place on Clear Creek Road was right outside of Fort Hood. We ate frozen pizza off paper plates while my dad stood over us. The second one, only a block away from the first, was a little smaller and a little messier, and she said she lived alone, but the soldier's boots by the door said otherwise. By the time she was in the third and final apartment, with a handful of roommates who she didn't even try to hide, Austin had such thick scabs around every finger. One of Mom's roommates walked in smoking a cigarette and offered it to my brother, who was 16 at the time. Our mom and dad screamed at each other for so long that night that I fell asleep on Austin's shoulder, and I woke up to my dad yanking open the car door and shouting that we were never, under any circumstance, to be around her without his supervision. As I sat in the driveway, I shook my head, trying to jumble up the memories enough to lose them and stay present in this moment with Kale. "Do you want a ride or not? I really have to get going." I repeated my offer, annoyed at myself for persisting.
"Aren't you already late? Elodie seemed pretty worried about you being late."
He leaned down to look at me, and I noticed his eyes on my cell phone screen.
"More worried than you, at least."
I smiled sarcastically and plugged my phone into the cord connected to my car. "Are you going to get in or not? Last chance." He made eye contact with me and held it just a second too long. I looked at myself in the rearview mirror while I thought of something witty yet sarcastic that I might say as I drove off, leaving him in the driveway. He changed my plan by trying to open the passenger door behind me. I pressed the lock button to prove a point. "This isn't an Uber," I told him, only half joking, and unlocked the doors. He walked around the car, opened the passenger door, and sat down next to me. This was different. Usually my only passenger was pint-sized Elodie, but here was this big guy sitting next to me with his knees touching the dashboard, smelling like my coconut body wash. "You can adjust the seat," I told him. I put the car in reverse and my gear shift stuck for a second. It had been doing that lately. My reliable Lumina had been on this earth for more years than I had, and was one of the few constants in life since I bought it for $500 on my 18th birthday. It was the first thing that was solely mine, and I didn't ask for a penny from my dad. I was the only one of my friends to have a job in high school, working part-time and weekends as a server at a local pizza place. My small group of friends would complain, trying to pull me away from work to go to parties, to the lake, to smoke weed in the parking lot of the elementary school where we hung out. Yes, elementary school. We were mildly delinquent, but at least I could pay for my own delinquency. All of them relied on their parents for allowance, and all three of them had since moved away. One went to Kentucky for college, one to Colorado for a change of scenery and a more exciting life, and one to Kansas for a soldier who promised to love her forever. "Ugh," I groaned, and jiggled the gear, frustrated at my car and the lie of forever. No one could ever love someone forever. After all these years growing up, love itself was the biggest lie I'd been told throughout my life. "Yeah, and my car and my house are falling apart. I know," I said, before Kale could. He looked over at me, confusion clear on his face.
"Didn't say anything."
He shrugged and looked out the window. I jiggled the gear one more time, and it finally moved. I looked at him again, and I swear there was a tiny bit of a smile on his face. It was hard to look away from. He annoyed the shit out of me, and I hated that his first impression of me outside of the spa had been a big, bright banner of my failing life. My tires crunched down the gravel driveway, and we were on our way. I picked up my phone and saw my dad's name across the top. I didn't need to read the text to know he was asking me where I was. I also didn't need to respond because why would I? I knew he'd lecture me anyway, and I'd rather keep it to one instead of two. Yay for Tuesdays! Chapter 16. The alley across the way looked deserted as we pulled onto the street. It was after work, with the shops now closed. Everyone had cleared out in the last hour, but Bradley's truck was still outside his mattress shop. Sometimes I would watch him drive from his shop to his house directly across the street with a truck bed full of mattresses, which always left me wondering what he was really transporting. Kale buckled his seatbelt across his chest, and I ignored the annoying ding my car gave, the one that reminded me to put my seatbelt on. Luckily, it was an old car, so it would ding only once, sometimes twice. I always waited to put my seatbelt on later, a few streets away. I'm not sure why. A little bit of living recklessly, I guess. As I got closer to my dad's house on Post, the familiar creep of dread was washing over me. I thought about trying to start a conversation with Kale, but from what little I knew about this guy, talking wasn't really his thing. I glanced over at him and quickly turned on the radio. I had never been around anyone who made me feel this prickly awkwardness before. I couldn't explain what this felt like. Couldn't even be sure that I disliked it. But I just had this weird desire to talk to him. What was that? The urge to pierce the air, the need to fill the space with words. Maybe Cale had it right by choosing his words sparingly, and the rest of us had it wrong. My Spotify was playing a song I hadn't heard before, but I recognized Shawn Mendes's voice immediately. I turned the volume up a little, trying to contain my inner fangirl on hearing a new song from him for the first time. Cale didn't react at all to the music, even when I turned it louder and played the song twice in a row. He sat there like a statue in my car as I drove closer and closer to the impending doom of the dinner table. My gas indicator light came on, a bright reminder of my disorganization and irresponsibility. When the Shawn Mendes song finished, it was time for an ad break. A testimonial for a weight loss clinic, great for my psyche, and an offer for low-interest car loans. "Huge military discounts," the voice promised, with a borderline drill sergeant shout. Someday I would be grown up enough to pay for ad-free listening, but that day wasn't here yet. "I can play something else if you want," I told him, ever the cordial host. "What kind of music do you like?"
"This is fine."
"Okay." I replayed the new Shawn song a third time. I exited the highway and was glad to see there wasn't a line to enter the base. I loved living on my side of town, close enough to the post, but far enough from my dad that I could breathe. "Here we are," I said, as if he couldn't see the bright lights ahead of us. He shifted his hips and pulled out a dog-eared wallet from the pocket of his ACU pants. He dropped his military ID into my open hand. The tips of his warm fingers grazed my skin, and I jerked my hand away. His ID fell between the seats. "Damn it, sorry." I shoved my fingers into the slim slot and managed to grab the card just as it was my turn to approach the guards.
"Welcome to the Great Place," the soldier working the gate said.
"Really?" I couldn't help but tease him. Ever since the soldiers were required to recite that ridiculous motto, I gave them shit about it. I couldn't help it. I did it in Texas and carried it on to Georgia.
"Yes, really,"
he said, his tone neutral. He inspected our ID cards and the standard decal stuck to my windshield.
"Have a good night,"
the soldier told us, though I knew he didn't care about our night. He probably thought we were together, that I was some barracks whore driving us to this guy's small room, where we'd have sex while his roommate slept in the other bed. Who even came up with the term barracks whore? And why did I think it so freely, without considering that the soldiers were also sleeping with random strangers? I felt like shit knowing how easily the word whore slipped into my head. I made a mental note to get better at the way I think about other women. "I don't know where I'm going," I reminded Cale.
"It's right up here,"
he mumbled, as I was passing a street on the right. "Right now?" I jerked the wheel to make the turn in time. He nodded.
"Next light, turn left there. There!"
"Dude!" I rolled my eyes, stopping my car for a second.
"What?"
The way he asked seemed like he'd forced himself to respond. I felt like he wanted to get out of my car as soon as possible, and the thought sort of pissed me off. I didn't necessarily want to be playing taxi for a stranger who was allegedly Elodie's husband's bestie. I barely knew Philip as it was, and his friend acting this way didn't exactly improve my opinion of Elodie's man.
"Sorry. Just go up a little further. It's there on the right. The brown building."
He gestured in the general direction. The buildings were nearly identical. The only things differentiating one from the other were the numbers painted on the sides. The one we were passing was either 33 or 88. The black paint was faded, so I couldn't tell. "Yeah, they're all the same big brown buildings here at the Great Place." I swear I heard the tiniest hint of a laugh, just a small puff of smoke, enough to show that he was at least mildly amused by my comment. Sure enough, when I looked over, there it was, a sliver of a smile spread across his lips.
"It's here."
He pointed to a massive parking lot. Kale kept his finger pointed at a navy blue truck parked in the back of the mostly empty lot. I pulled up next to it, about a car's length away.
Thanks.
He looked at me like he was searching for something. Karina, I told him, and he nodded.
Thanks, Karina.
I tried to calm the swarm of bees in my stomach as he climbed out of my car without another word. Chapter 17. I don't know what I expected Kale to drive, but this beast of a truck wasn't it. When I sized him up, literally and figuratively, I came to the conclusion that he'd drive something practical, like a black sedan or a medium-sized white pickup truck. But it wasn't this massive, dilapidated blue thing with rust circling the wheel well and covering most of the passenger side. The truck Jeep car thing said Bronco in bold letters and had two big circle headlights. The tires were so oversized that the truck somehow made Kale look small. His truck Jeep thing was actually really cool, but it needed some work. The more I noticed about the car, the more I realized it suited him perfectly. Like the saying that dogs and owners start to look alike after a while. Or is it husbands and wives? Either way, his truck simply fit him. He had the standard Georgia plates, peaches with the corny slogan, and Clayton County printed across the bottom. I had no idea where that was. I wondered if he actually was from Georgia or if he bought the car here. You never knew with soldiers. Cars seemed to drop from the sky above. If his hometown was really in Georgia, I wondered how he felt being here with home not far away. Or did it feel far away? The perspective depends on your situation. I would feel distant even if I was in the same county as my dad and his wife. But maybe Kale had a good relationship with his family and felt close and content and okay with that. I didn't know this about him, but now I wanted to find out. I kept watching Kale. I don't think I'd ever seen someone like him. He wasn't doing anything spectacular like men in the novels I'd read and films I'd seen, but there was something inside of him that made him sort of glow compared to other people. He was charming, too, but in an unassuming way. He knew who he was, and he gave me this almost competitive feeling, this little burn in my stomach to try to be on his level. He was Elodie's friend, and he was going to be sleeping in my house. Was it going to be weird? It was absolutely going to be weird. I yanked my visor mirror down and checked my appearance. The light surrounding the mirror came on, but Kale didn't notice. He was calling someone and standing at least 10 feet away from where I was in my car. Yikes. I swiped under my eyes. The mascara on my lower lashes had left little flakes of black across the top of my cheekbone. I was pale, abnormally so. I slapped and pinched my cheeks a little and sucked in my lips and counted to 10. It was what the girls my age were doing on Instagram and getting thousands of views doing so. It worked, but I looked way too frazzled for this evening. I should have finished styling my hair. I turned to scan my back seat, hoping to find one of my gigantic cloth scrunchies. I had at least 2 in my car at all times. Minimal time spent with the illusion of effort. I watched as Kale stuck his hand under the metal sheet above his front tire and felt along the surface. He tried to call someone else, and I finally found a white hair tie and pulled half of my hair up. A lot of loose pieces of my wavy hair came down. I messed with them a little, and then put gloss on my lips. I glanced at my reflection one last time, and when Kale hung up the phone, I closed the mirror. The more I watched him, standing there in the dark, pacing around with his iPhone going back and forth from his pocket to his cheek, the more I felt uneasy about this whole situation. I thought Elodie's excitement over his arrival might be her loneliness getting the better of her, someone familiar taking the place of the husband she missed so much. She was so lonely lately that some days she cried all night. This Kale guy was the closest person to her husband, and I was the closest friend she had, so I needed to be on guard with him, making sure he was not just spying on his buddy's pregnant wife. Soldiers did that more often than you'd think. I was about to Google Clayton County and his license plate number when he opened my car door and leaned down, totally dominating the space, or lack of, between us. I leaned away from him, It almost felt like I had to.
You can go,
he told me. I didn't know him well enough to decipher what he was really thinking. It almost felt rude. I wanted to challenge him, to taunt him for being locked out of his car, but I was about to piss myself. I was already late and had no room to be snarky. But I was curious about this soldier. I looked at his truck and back to him. Can you not get in? He sighed heavily and shook his head. I could see the frustration emanating from his body. He seemed like someone on the brink of losing a very carefully crafted control. So different from the man standing in my hallway minutes ago and sitting calmly in my car on the drive over. His breathing was dancing the line of composure and chaos. In my 20 years on this earth, I'd come across many a frustrated man. Why did this one spark my curiosity so uniquely?
My keys are supposed to be here on my tire, but I'll find my way back, it's cool.
I'm so late to this thing I have to do, but honestly—
The dinner? I don't think you should be any later than you already are,
he cautioned. So he was paying attention. Yeah, the dinner. I can't take you back before, but maybe I can call my dad and cancel, it's not like— Kale interrupted me.
It's cool, for real.
I couldn't just leave him here. There were barely any cars parked in the lot, and I couldn't see other soldiers walking or standing guard anywhere. I really didn't want to leave him stranded.
Why haven't you left yet?
I opened my door and got out of the car. I don't know, I feel bad, I replied. It's a long walk back. Do you have another set of keys somewhere, or a friend who can come help you?
All my friends are in Afghanistan,
he said. My chest burned. Sorry, I said, leaning back against my car.
For what?
We kept eye contact until he blinked. I quickly looked away. I don't know. The war? It sounded so stupid coming from my mouth. An army brat apologizing to a soldier for a war that started before either of them were born. Most people wouldn't have asked me for what. Kale's tongue grazed his bottom lip. He tucked it between his teeth. The parking lot lights above us clacked on, buzzing, breaking our silence.
I'm not most people.
I can tell. The light shone through the windows of the barracks across the street, but it didn't seem like he lived there. That meant he was either married or higher ranking than his age would suggest. Soldiers below a certain rank could live off post only if they were married, but I couldn't imagine that a married man would be sleeping on my chair right after a deployment. Besides, he wasn't wearing a ring. I was checking out his ACU jacket for his rank patch when I saw his eyes on me. Are you coming with me, Sergeant, or are you going to make me stand in this parking lot until you call a locksmith for your car? I looked at the patch on his chest, his last name stitched in capital letters. Martin. He was so young to be a sergeant. Come on. I put my hands up, begging. You don't know me, but this is what will happen if I leave you here. About 5 seconds after I drive away, I'll feel guilty and I'll obsess over it the entire way to my dad's. I'll imagine you getting hit by a car or passing out or something. Some awful death scenario, and then by the time the dinner is over, it'll be worse, way worse. I rolled my wrist in a circle and looked him right in the eyes. My mouth was dry. I was talking a lot, and not slowly. It didn't seem to annoy him, and I wasn't even getting that little bubble of fear of rejection from basic contact with other humans like I usually did. I continued, more animated. I'm talking apology texts to Elodie, who will be stressed because she worries about everyone, and then we're talking the guilt level of stressing out a pregnant woman, and good Lord, who knows what will happen to the baby?
The Lord,
he said randomly. I studied the scar in his eyebrow as he spoke. It was small, but somehow made his look more interesting. What?
You said, who knows what will happen. So I answered you.
He didn't smile, even when I merely cackled. I covered my mouth with my hands to keep my laughter in. This guy was the kind of funny everyone wanted to be. The kind who could just say random stuff like, the Lord, and it was effortlessly funny. He was probably never awkward, and he seemed like he knew he was good at humor. He didn't physically show it, but I could hear it.
Are you always funny? I asked him. He shook his head, looking away from me. I stared at him, but he didn't let up or look at me. Anyway, I'll have to drive around trying to find you if you haven't made it back yet. It's messy, Kale, and probably easier if you just get in. I'm sure my dad's called me at least 5.
Okay, okay.
He held up his hands in mock defeat. I nodded, smiling in my victory, and you know what? He almost smiled back. Chapter 18. No matter where we were stationed, my dad always chose to live within the gates of the post in the housing that was offered, from both of the Carolinas down to Georgia to Texas. I didn't mind it so much when I was young, because the small handful of friends I had lived very close by, but as we moved, then moved again and again, it got old fast. I started to hate the groomed cul-de-sacs, all the American flags and impeccable yards, and the lines of cars at each gate every single time we left the post. The older Austin and I got, the more we hated it. But our dad loved his army life. The commissary and the PX convenience store, both tax-free, and the company where he worked every day just down the street. He felt empowered in this domain. But as Austin and I grew up, we started to feel trapped. Austin and my caged feeling was nothing compared to our mother's. When we were younger, she was alive and bright with the excitement of a new place, a new environment every time we moved. But as the weeks went by, she would begin to pace around the new house, picking at little things, rearranging the dolls in her open glass cabinet to introduce her own bit of chaos to the pristine quarters my dad expected her to maintain. She was always up, 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 or down, down, down. There was never an in-between. There were these hours of madness that seamlessly morphed into days of lunacy. They began in small stretches of mornings when the curtains were never opened, lunches weren't packed, and my dad yelled about the empty coffee pot or the laundry left in the dryer for days. My mom would start to smoke again on the porch, staring at the replicated identical houses on the street. When it got really bad, the couch turned into her bed, and Austin and I knew better than to comment on our parents sleeping in separate parts of the house. We also sort of enjoyed the peace that came with their distance. As I stared at the road in front of me, Kale's quietness allowed me to continue thinking about the slow unraveling of Mrs. Fisher I. Her decline was subtle, with each episode lasting only a few days, and mostly peaking when my dad was at work. She had two personas for most of our life, and we watched her switch gears in an instant from military wife to a woman falling apart. The paranoia, the anxiety, the messiness of her ashtrays on the porch, and the stains on her clothes. By the summer after eighth grade, her mania had completely taken over. She woke up later and later, took fewer showers, stopped dancing, and even stopped pacing. She would stare at the wall in silence for hours, and even her fairy tales turned sinister and eventually burned out.
You think I'm funny?
Kale's voice drew me out of my memories of my mom, just as a knot in my chest was beginning to move up toward my throat. He was eyeing the green light above us. I pressed the gas. What? I faltered, clearing my throat. I was reliving my childhood while he was still on a question I had asked him. My chest was aching, and focusing on his cool voice and his steady eyes helped fade the image of my mom. He turned his body toward me. I kept my attention on the road. We drove past a Subway, and it reminded me of my brother always craving their cookies when he was stoned.
People don't usually ask other people if they're funny. It kind of ruins the joke,
he said, and stared out the window. I gave him an annoyed look. Do you want me to apologize for asking you about your humor? Is this a thing? I turned onto the main road and tried to figure out where I was.
No, not a thing.
Okay, so we're going to my dad's house, and not only am I late, which he hates, he's kind of... I exhaled, trying to pinpoint such a complicated man with one word. He's sort of...
racist?
Kale asked. What? No. I felt a little defensive over his question, until I turned toward him and saw the look on his face. It said that he figured that was what I was going to say and that I couldn't find a tactful way to say it. I didn't know what to think about that. He's not racist,
I told Cale as we drove. I couldn't think of anything my dad had ever said or done to make me believe he was. He's just kind of an asshole. Cale nodded and leaned back in his seat. This dinner will drag on longer than it should. Too much food for three people. Too much matching cutlery. Too much everything. Cale nodded again. Ugh, his silence here wasn't helpful. He wasn't prepared for my father. I made sure to stay on the main road, really the only route I could navigate without getting lost in the sprawl of Fort Benning. We were less than 5 minutes from my dad's house, but I was more than half an hour late. It would be fine. I was an adult, and something came up. They would get over it. I repeated that to myself and began to concoct an excuse that didn't necessarily involve a stranger staying at my house. My phone vibrated in the cup holder between us, and I reached for it the moment I saw that it was Austin calling. I couldn't remember the last time he'd returned one of my calls. I'm gonna get this, I didn't finish explaining to Cale. Hello? I spoke into the phone, but got only silence. I lifted it from my cheek. Damn it. I'd missed the call. I tried to call him back, but he didn't pick up. I hated feeling like I let him down by missing a call or not being there for him, even though he had no problem ignoring my calls and casually treating me like an inconvenience. If you see the screen light up, tell me. The sound doesn't always work. I looked down at my phone, and Cale agreed with a nod.
Another broken thing,
I swear I heard him say. But when I asked him what he'd mumbled, he shrugged. I turned onto my dad's street and tried to spend the last 2 minutes of the drive conjuring up an achievement, or something I could stretch to sound like one. I would need something to talk about after the scolding for my extreme tardiness. My dad always asked his darling wife and me the same questions. The difference was, it only took her planning a flower bed or going to someone else's kid's birthday party to get praise, when I could save a small village and he would be like, "That's great, Care, but it was a small village." Austin once saved a slightly larger village, and Estelle created two villages. It wasn't healthy to compare myself to his new wife or to my brother. I was self-aware enough to know that. But the way he cosseted her still bugged the hell out of me. And then there was the fact that Austin was my dad's doppelganger, and I was my mom's. We were twins, but he looked like him and I looked like her. This worked out better for my brother than it did for me. To my dad, I was a copy and a constant reminder of my mother. We're almost there. My dad's been in the army a long time. Cale was a soldier. He wouldn't need more of an explanation. He nodded beside me and looked out the passenger window. How long have you been in? I asked. I heard him swallow before he spoke.
Little over 3 years.
And you've already deployed? He nodded.
Twice.
I was curious to know more, to ask him if he liked being in the army, but we were pulling up in front of my dad's house. We're here, I warned him. It's like a whole fiasco. Three courses, lots of small talk and coffee after, 2 hours minimum.
2 hours?
He blinked. I know. You can take my car if you want to skip it, as long as you pick me up later.
No, dinner's cool. Anything else I should know?
My dad doesn't do strangers. We could lie and say you're my brother's, Austin's, friend. He's my twin.
Austin. Got it.
Cale opened the passenger door and leaned down to talk to me while I was still in my seat. I checked my hair in the mirror. It was almost dry. The air was thick with humidity, and it showed. I wiped away the little black specks of mascara under my eyes. I grabbed my phone. Austin hadn't called back. The pounding guilt was there again for not answering the call. It was only one call, I reminded myself. I'll tell you, however awful you think it's going to be, it's gonna be worse than that. The more I thought about it, he probably should have stayed in the car. I didn't even know him, and he wasn't exactly friendly. But neither was my dad.
Mm-hmm,
I thought I heard him say. I looked up as the passenger door shut. The reality of just how bad an idea it was to bring a stranger to Tuesday dinner was sinking in. Chapter 19. I was fidgety, wiping my hands on my legs. I always did that when I was nervous. We walked up the sidewalk as the little solar light trail was turning on with the sun going down. The house was brick, recently power washed, and clean as always. "I'll do the talking," I said to Kale as we approached the door. "Let me explain why we're late, why I'm late." Then it dawned on me who I was talking to. A soldier wouldn't have a problem being quiet, especially not this one. I really could have used a shot of tequila or some magic pill to get rid of the race of thoughts tearing at my mind. Distracted by my anxiety, I started to knock on the white wooden door, then realized what I was doing, opened it, and took my shoes off, suddenly mortified that Kale could see I didn't have matching socks on. He politely took his boots off, setting them next to my little sneakers. "One of the many rules in this house," I whispered to him, and he nodded, looking me in the eyes instead of around the room. He followed me into the kitchen, which was filled with the aroma of honey and cinnamon, and what might have been ham. It smelled like a holiday. "Hey, you made it. I was getting a little worried." Estelle greeted me like she usually did. Fake. Whether it was excitement or worry, it was all fake. "Sorry, I'm late," I said. "I had to stay behind a little at work, and then I was helping Elodie's friend. I mean, Austin's friend. Well, he's sort of everyone's friend." I turned to introduce Kale. I was clearly freaking the hell out, and we had been in the kitchen for maybe 30 seconds, max. Estelle wasn't doing the best job either at hiding her surprise over the extra body in the room. "Oh, well, hey, hi, I'm Estelle." Her big earring shook with her head, and I found myself sort of using Kale's body as a shield from her. My dad was seated at the head of the table when Kale and I entered the dining room. He might have been reading the Army Times or listening to the radio, but no, he was sitting in his king chair in silence, just waiting. His confused look turned to stone as he stared at us in the entryway. I took him in, sitting there with his craggy face and sparse white hair. It was really thinning now. So was his papery skin. Everyone on my dad's side of the family turned to snow early. It looked beautiful on the women. At least it did in photographs. But I secretly hoped I would take after my mom, as I always had. She was eternal summer. My dad moved his eyes off me without any expression on his face and looked at Kale, who took a step back. Instinct or nervousness? Who knew? My dad was only a few inches over 5 feet tall, and he was intimidating, even sitting down. He could be soft at times, and when he didn't want to, he could cut like a knife. I was waiting for the fallout for being late when my dad finally stood up to shake Kale's hand, his eyes moving to the name on his chest.
"Martin, nice to—"
Estelle interrupted the conversation as she entered the dining room carrying a bowl with a big wooden spoon sticking out of it. She always wore slightly different versions of the same outfit. Jeans with a little flare at the bottom and a button-down shirt with a pattern. With the exception of the fitted dresses she showed off in pictures on her Facebook, she always dressed the same way. I had never really seen Estelle less than put together, even during that first year of their marriage when we all lived under the same roof. My brother and I would come downstairs before school, and she would offer us eggs or toast and have fresh coffee left over from my dad, who left early each day for physical training. Her perfect outfits were a kind of uniform. Today's top was striped blue and red. She told me once, while staring at both of our bodies in the mirror in the hallway, that she liked to buy these fitted shirts because of the way they flattered her shape. She twisted her torso like a model when she said it, as if she was having fun bonding with her new husband's daughter. It had been excruciating, and made me feel like complete shit about the way I looked. I already had a complicated relationship with my body, and the last thing I needed was my new size 2 stepmother telling me how to dress. Bonding for her was triggering for me, and I don't know that I'll ever have the courage to tell her that. "So, Kale is Elodie's husband's friend," I said, avoiding eye contact with my dad. "And he knows Austin. He's going to eat with us, okay? He's locked out of his car." I didn't want to go through all the details, so I hoped my fragmented word vomit made enough sense to avoid further questioning. Estelle motioned for Kale to sit next to my dad. Kale glanced at me, then toward my dad. They shared a look I couldn't recognize, and as Kale went to sit down, I held my arm out, motioning for him to sit on the other side of me as I took the chair next to my father. No need for Kale to occupy the hot seat.
I'm assuming you've heard from your brother?
My dad inquired, skipping the niceties in small talk. I pulled out my phone. I missed a call from him.
He's on his way.
He's on his way where? I asked.
He's coming here, Karina.
My dad took a long, slow drink of water as I wondered why the hell Austin would turn up at our dad's house.
He was arrested last night. Neither of you knew about it?
My dad's eyes were a carbon copy of my brother's. Bright blue ice. I half stood up from my chair. What? For what?
I don't know exactly. The precinct won't tell me since he's over 18. If it had been on government property, I could easily have found out,
he said, and huffed. My dad wasn't used to not getting what he wanted. I could see the faint twitch of his eye masking the disappointment and shame he was going to pour all over my brother once he arrived. And how was he getting here? I asked. Whatever this incident was that got him arrested, it must have been the reason he'd been calling me on my drive over. And I missed the call. Guilt bit me a little harder.
Driving?
My dad shrugged. Estelle sighed, still fussing over her presentation on the table. Moving effortlessly with stealth, she leaned over me to adjust the breadbasket and reposition a napkin holder on the other side of the floral centerpiece. He's driving himself. I immediately had a bad feeling about this. Dad nodded.
He should be here in a couple hours.
Kale sat there with an almost diplomatic look on his face. His eyes were tracking whoever was speaking. He didn't look panicked or stressed or the least bit bothered. Something felt cold and political about his presence. Where is he going to stay? I asked. Will he have to go back to North Carolina to deal with the arrest? I hoped it was only a minor infraction, something like public intoxication, which he'd dealt with before. Not like the aggravated assault that got pinned to him that summer when Dad saved his ass because it happened on post. My dad's power was used as currency.
He's staying here. And we don't need to talk about this anymore right now, not in front of your...
He looked at Kale, but Kale's eyes were on me.
Friend,
he pronounced. Kale was still looking at me. I felt a bit dizzy from the intensity of his attention, like the effect of a massage. I slowly started to feel my tensions releasing, enjoying the way my body was responding. Imagining that I could read his mind and he was saying something to calm me, I started to feel less dazed and confused. Maybe things would be okay?
If you don't have anything useful to say about your brother, let's talk about something else,
my dad said, moving the conversation off the subject of Austin's arrest.
Lighten up the mood.
Okay, I said, wondering what was coming next.
Okay,
he echoed. My dad's stone face fell for the smallest of seconds. He was playing his usual mental chess game with me. The difference was that I, for whatever reason, suddenly felt like it was stupid. A waste of time to play a passive-aggressive game with him. Kale was watching me, and stealing a quick glance at him felt like the courageous hit of a cigarette. Yeah, whatever you want to talk about, Dad. I nodded, looking up at Estelle, my father, then back to Kale. Kale gave me a little smile, followed by a nod. I shrugged. Barely a connection, but his tiny bit of approval felt so reassuring to me. This time with him was feeding the starvation of my loneliness. Estelle clucked around my dad as he tapped his thick fingers against the table, ready to keep up the sparring match with me. She did this during every single meal, no matter what was happening around her. Even if we were going at it or he was scolding my brother for getting pulled over for the fifth time. And even now, with a stranger watching, she